Nighthawks versus the DCU. The ultimate team up. 3, 2, 1.
Matt, did you know that Everybody Knows, which was featured in the movie, was first released by Leonard Cohen on his album I'm Your Man from February 1988. And I say that we're throwing it back. We get another shot to open an episode with Everybody Knows.
You mean similar to the way we opened the episode we did on Pump Up the Volume?
The greatest also, episode of all time, yeah.
Which also figures where Everybody Knows is actually a plot point.
Yeah.
Hey,
so,
at some point we should do an episode on Exotica, another movie that features Everybody Knows. Do you remember when that came out?
God, yeah. It's been a long time.
That was one that was like, oh, that's so dirty. And then you watch it and you're like,
this isn't dirty.
It's kind of dirty, but they
it's cheap.
I feel like I was marketed to. I slunk into Hastings to rent this for $1 on the sly, expecting to learn things about myself and others. And what I really learned is that I'm a slave to marketing, and I've been tricked into watching a family drama that just happens to be partially set in a strip club. But I will give that film credit. I believe that is my actual introduction to Leonard Cohen, 1993 or 94 when I watched that. 14,
oh, okay.
15.
Yeah. Yeah, I think actually it was Pump Up the Volume for me, because I caught that on kind of a first go round through HBO or Cinemax or something, and it would have been right around that time. Also started watching that movie because when I checked the TV Guide description, it said it had nudity in it, to bring the conversation
Shameful.
Full circle.
Shameful. I hope you purified yourself.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor, the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows.
Good evening to you, ladies and gentlemen. We are the Nighthawks. Or are we? Or is the Nighthawks the diner? We've never been particularly clear on that.
Actually, in my version of the Nighthawks conceptual continuity, we're all one. Everybody featured in the diner, like the man behind the counter and the gentle waitress who tolerates our foibles and is alternatingly sort of sassy yet maternal toward us, even though we really only buy coffee and ourselves. We're all projections of a great subterranean being that has extruded a functional diner as a sort of like the lure on a lantern fish. And we're fleshy protuberances of it that allow it to lure in and digest in Sarlaccian fashion any other diner that were to enter. And that's why it's always empty except for us.
Holy dude. Are you? So this is a podcast
about movies.
And we...
What?
We watched a movie this weekend, and I think Matt's story just now was infinitely more entertaining than this movie. I shouldn't say that. I'm being hyperbolic there. No, not
this
to say
is
that
a
you're
pill for the world to blend superheroes together.
So, we've covered the last, a few of the last several Warner Brothers DC Universe movies that have come out. We kind of absentmindedly and almost In hindsight, it's probably a good thing. But we had not covered Wonder Woman, although we intended to. And I'm kind of glad we didn't, because the conversation would have got really awkward right about now. Because there was a lot politically going on with Wonder Woman at the time. Would have involved us allying with a company that maybe not quite so feminist friendly as we thought it was at the time. So glad we didn't do that. But since we last left our intrepid heroes, Matt, you really liked Wonder Woman, didn't you?
I liked Wonder Woman a lot. I teared up a little.
Yeah, I actually thought it was pretty good. I think it's the first DC movie that I saw in theaters twice. Yeah, we really liked that. We were kind of half and half, a little tepid. You can go back and listen to this episode. A little tepid on Batman versus Superman, : Dawn of Justice, a.k.a. BVS DOJ, a.k.a. Matt?
Beavis Dodge.
Yes, our episode on Beavis Dodge, where we kind of landed where we were... It was just kind of bland. It was middle of the road. And then we hit Suicide Squad, which I actively disliked. Matt, I think you were a little kinder to it, but not much kinder.
I don't know. Deadshot was pretty cool.
And that was kind of our... I was going back and listening to those old episodes, and that's kind of where we landed with all of them, is like, oh, they all have really good parts. The one analogy I made in Batman versus Superman, : Dawn of Justice, was that somebody had all of the finest Swiss clock innards and dumped them in a box, and they're still really good clock parts, it's just nobody assembled them into a functional clock. And that's kind of how I'm feeling with this latest edition with Justice League. Now, what I will say is, in the grand ranking, the grand scheme of it all, I liked Justice League better than Batman versus Superman, : Dawn of Justice. I liked it better than Suicide Squad. I did not like it better than Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman is still kind of on the top for me, and I think that's kind of where I'm going to start my criticism. But Matt, how did it treat you?
I don't know. Ranking those is pretty hard. I think... I really don't know where I would put Man of Steel, because Man of Steel is one I was super mixed on, because I actually really like the current Superman.
Yeah, I really like Henry Cavill too.
Like he's perfect. Well, and I don't mean just him. Like he certainly physically fits the bill, but we learned in what was it, The Man from U.N.C.L.E. that just him. Him and Armie Hammer actually being large did not sell a movie. What's interesting about the DCU and what works in it right now is the dueling takes on naivete and change agency that they're bringing in through Wonder Woman and Superman. Superman is a guy that's too naive to worry that he can't change things, and Wonder Woman is almost like too naive to think she can. And so those oppositional and then you have Bruce Wayne, who's cynical enough to think that he should. And so you have these dueling takes on power, and that's really what's at the core of combined maybe with Arthur Curry's ignoring his ability to sort of in the Spider-Man sense of ignoring his great responsibility. So you have those dueling takes on power. And that's the working core of the DC universe that they could elaborate on and make something great around. But then you have the problem of Man of Steel is also where we kind of saw the weird CGI finale start. The odd liberties taken with some of the villains. The things that sort of soften the DC
cinematic DC universe. Yeah.
That's where you saw the rot sort of start. But I would definitely rank them. I gotta put Suicide Squad at the bottom, I think.
So oh, absolutely.
It would probably be,
yeah.
Then it would probably be Beavis Dodge, and I would put Man of Steel marginally above that, and then this new Justice League, and then Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman's structurally the best. It's got the best portrayals in it. It's got the best, and lo and behold, it's one of the solo movies.
Mm-hmm.
we were discussing before that, like, her seizure of Wonder Woman as a signature role has probably put Gal Gadot on the A-list for sure.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
What she brings to the part is incredible, because she somehow, she really does seem at the same time to seem like someone who is old beyond her years and also still very naive.
Mm-hmm.
She's almost cartoonishly attractive, right? And they make that work, because she's wearing like this, she wears clothes that like only like a Bond villain would wear. but then they somehow make it natural. Like she just looks like someone who really would just wear crazy clothes and pull them off. And,
right.
and she, mm-hmm. she just, and there's something about her and Cavill that they really do look like aliens. They make that trope of inhuman beauty actually function in a way that makes them, not in a way that you exculpate the fact that their attractiveness is played with, in a way where you really go like, oh, no, they really do look like they're not from here. They look like somebody made a perfect space god to lead us. And not in a joking way, in a faintly disturbing way. And that's, I think that's the best of that's the best element of Zack Snyder's influence on the DCU.
What we're gonna do is we're gonna discuss this very generally. I don't know that there's a whole lot of M. Night Shyamalan level spoilers to contend with here. There's not many. There's one that people are kind of saying is a big twist, that if you've paid attention to any of the pre-film release publicity, you know is coming. And really, I mean, just beyond knowing what the plot is and what the actual course of events is, there really isn't anything to spoil here. But to that end, we really don't want to ruin it for anybody. So we're going to speak very, very generally at first. And then we'll throw up our spoiler warning. We'll get super granular on the other side of that, because a lot of my feelings for this movie are going to be negative. And it's going to be hard to discuss that without getting into specifics. And those specifics are going to fall behind the spoiler curtain, unfortunately. So I apologize if it seems like I'm being unnecessarily crass, but yeah, this one just it was bland. And I'm going to, like I said, it's better than Batman versus Superman, but I need more than that now. I can't let that be a pass. And people are saying that, well, at least it's better than .. It's better than Suicide Squad. It's better than Batman versus Superman. I need more than that now, because I have had Wonder Woman. So I need something that is as good as or better than Wonder Woman. And this is not that movie. And it's unfortunate, because it suffers from some very bad writing, some kind of choppy directing. This movie had a lot of production problems. Some of that is probably very understandable. We had some shuffling around of musicians. We had some shuffling around of directors and writers. DC is just kind of a hot garbage fire right now, and Warner Brothers just can't really seem to right the ship, and it's getting frustrating. And it's, I do enjoy these characters, and I want to see them in good movies, and they have good moments. And so you know that spark is there, that potential could have been realized, but something somewhere along the line just didn't glue. It's almost more disappointing to see a movie come so close to the bar without hitting it than it is to see a movie like Suicide Squad that missed the bar by a mile. But in both cases, and this is what's really frustrating, and we've talked about this before, is that Warner Brothers is throwing dump trucks of money at these projects. They have some of the best artists in the industry working on it. They hired the guy who wrote The Avengers to come in and write DC's Avengers. And this is after DC had kind of made it a point to say, we're kind of doing it our own way and doing our own thing. And when that wasn't working, they went and got the guy who wrote The Avengers that they're kind of, that's what they want. They want this shared universe movie that's going to shatter box office records. And they're trying so hard, but the more they squeeze, the more it seems to slip through their fingers. And it's become a very interesting academic thing to watch. But at the same time, it's like, man, whose do I have to get a good DC superhero movie?
Would you believe mine? Crossing fingers.
I like Ben Affleck as Batman. About halfway through this movie, you can tell he just kind of gave up. But he had something there. He was working. I like Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman. I really like Jason Momoa as... Oh, God, I like Jason Momoa as Aquaman. But... He's still...
Yeah, it makes you wonder... never mind. That joke's too dirty for the podcast.
Okay, I'm just going to say this. I identify as a straight white male. That dude is on my menu.
No, I remarked to you when you got out of it, like, you almost feel bad for Affleck because Ben Affleck is someone who's inarguably in the top 1% of human attractiveness, right? I mean, he worked at the Fashionable Male all through college. But, so here he is. He's 6'1", cleft chin, tall, dark, handsome, very conventionally attractive dude in any other movie, like, say, Phantoms. He'd be the hot guy. And he's in a movie with not one, not two, but three people that make him look like a troll. And that just has to sting a little bit, like when you're, you know, when you're the second fastest man alive. I like the design of the Batfleck. Like, I like the idea of an aging Batman that's turning more and more into an Iron Man type character, that he's which is consistent with what ultimately leads into the Dark Knight and stuff, that he relies more and more on technology and ever larger and more authoritarian bat vehicles and bat suits and bat. And I also like that the costume design really, and his portrayal, they make it seem like this is canonically the same guy from the Dark Knight. There's enough Christopher Nolan Batman in the Batfleck that you can sort of... It doesn't feel like it's a complete recast.
Yeah, you know? I mean, like, and then, I think technically, yes, they are separate, but I think they intentionally made that line blurry for people who are having trouble hopping so many continuities.
Well, and then what they did is instead of blending that with the older cinematic Batman, they blended it with the current comic Batman and the Arkham Asylum game universe Batman, which is the design that his costume and stuff is based on, is the Arkham Asylum games with the highly textured Kevlar suit and that, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I think he looks really good, and he looks like the face of the Batman property right now. So, and I think he's a very serviceable Bruce Wayne, and we've talked before about the great characterization of the Jeremy Irons who seems really plausible as the ex-MI6 Alfred that would raise this.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it almost adds this note of, like, did Alfred shape him a little bit? Is Alfred the real Batman because he got control as the sensical or the regent? He got financial control early and he brought Bruce Wayne up this way, you know? So there is some interesting darkness in that Alfred relationship. And, we've talked before about what your criteria for badness, right?
Yeah.
And we've discussed the Ishtar factor, where it's not that the movie is literally the worst movie of all time. Oh, hi, Mark.
Hi, doggy.
It's that it's tragic that it could have been. It's worse when some things work sometimes. I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you what. Here's another problem this movie suffers from. And you mentioned a little bit of Jeremy Irons. He's cool in this, but you don't get enough of him. You just get a taste. And it almost feels like he's been mistreated. And you've got cameos from the likes of J.K. Simmons and Amber Heard, Joe Morton, Diane Lane, Amy Adams.
I like them.
They're almost robbed. It's criminal how little they give them to work with. And especially in Joe Morton's case, and maybe I don't want to tip too far into, they give Joe Morton and Ray Fisher some of the clunkiest, hardest expository dialogue that I've heard in recent times. And I almost consider it a violent crime by Joss Whedon on those two actors.
Can we make a general sci-fi law that Joe Morton just needs to stop messing with cybernetics? It's yet to go anywhere good, you know?
You know, this is but, not uh, This is not Joe Morton's first tangle in the DC universe. He was actually a multi-episode arc character in... It was Smallville. Dr. Stephen Hamilton, who is this kind of ambiguous, you're not sure if he's a good guy or a bad guy type of character.
The scene where they fly off to, you know, they fly off to have a climactic battle, and Alfred is standing on the bat dock, and you're just like, why don't you take him? seems like he can probably shoot straight. You know?
Yeah, yeah. It's like, dude, that guy knocked over the Federal Reserve Bank. Sorry, if it wasn't for Bruce Willis, he would have gotten away with it.
I don't quite remember the details of that caper precisely, but it was pretty amusing.
So, yeah, I think, honestly, this, and without getting too specific, I think this has a lot of writing problems. And I am noticing a disturbing trend that some of my writing problems with Justice League were some of my writing problems with Age of Ultron, and were also some of my writing problems with the first Avengers movie, which, out of the three, Avengers, Avengers 2, and Justice League, is probably my favorite, but it was a qualified favorite. It was like, that, my review for that movie is the review that people are giving this, I've noticed online, where it's like, hey, it's flawed, but it's a lot of fun. And so that, I guess that's why this is kind of rubbing me the wrong way. It's like, man, I already had that once, and now this is my third dose of it, and I'm starting to feel a little queasy, you know?
We should disclaim, an ensemble movie that size is hard to write.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I do not envy them at all.
I think balancing the screen time is hard. The property has a problem. Just like Suicide Squad, just like Avengers, has a problem with power asymmetry. Like, what really are some of the Hawkeyes and the Captain Boomerang going to do to Steppenwolf, you know?
Yeah. I had a problem with the villain, too. It's like, they had to pick the most B-tier, generic, and if I'm being honest, very, very similar to the villains that we've seen out of the Avengers. He also had bears kind of a weird physical resemblance to Loki and maybe some of the White Walkers from Game of Thrones. I mean, the villain was just really generic and kind of phony looking, and the CGI was not functional. And I'm going to do you guys a favor right now. Skip 3D on this one. It did nothing for this movie. Absolutely nothing. I saw a 3D version. Because it was like at 10 in the morning, I forgot that it was in 3D about halfway through because it was just really unimpressive.
If the intended through line for the Justice League movies is Darkseid and the Apocalyptans, I refuse to say it Darkseid until they write it right. The conflict between New Genesis and Apocalypse spilling over onto Earth, two planets where everybody's superpowered, one good, one bad. Steppenwolf has a role in that. He sort of has a relationship to Darkseid very similar to Vader and the Emperor. His canonical place is there if you happen to be a big fan of the space operatic sort of universe spanning Justice League plots and the Jack Kirby 70s space opera comics, right? Which some of them are real trippy, and
yeah,
and that's also an interesting, if you want to get into universe versus universe, that was an interesting time because Kirby also gave us a lot of the trippy 70s operatic stuff at Marvel, and then he left Marvel and took his art style to DC and did Mr. Miracle and the New Gods. And so the same guy that is responsible for the very successfully implemented kind of look of the same genetics are in the Justice League and Thor.
Yeah.
Because Thor Ragnarok is very much a Kirby-esque, you know, right down to the music they picked and the visuals they selected. It's very, very much a 70... Thor Ragnarok, and I mean this in a good way, it is a cinematic van mural.
Well, Well, and I don't know why. I don't know why Thor works so much better for me. Especially, like, the Thor arm of the Marvel franchise has probably been consistently my least favorite. Up until this recent edition, like, the first one where he's kind of the fish out of water on Earth was cute, but ultimately just kind of generic. And then the second one, Dark World, was a little too dark and brooding, but it was good for what it was. I saw it once, I'll never watch it again. And then you get Thor Ragnarok, which is this really off-the-wall, kind of goofy, fun action romp. And somehow that transition made sense with the other things they've done in that Marvel universe, with the introduction of Guardians of the Galaxy, things like that, where we kind of set up the tone that once you get off Earth's surface, things get a little looser.
Well, and the other thing they get is, if you leave Earth, stay gone. One of the great successes of Guardians of the Galaxy is that it doesn't diddle mess around in that, what would you call it?
They don't have the Doctor Who syndrome where they're constantly hanging around Earth, even though they have, you know, the entire galaxy to romp around in. Is that what you're getting at?
You know who's real bad about it is urban fantasy novels. Like, if you read a thing where a ghost detective solves vampire murders, yeah. if you ever tap into that genre, they're real bad about, like, oh, the secret entrance to the Magician's Academy is under the Statue of Liberty. Like you've really gone to the trouble of crafting a fantasy world just to go to places, just to send the characters places where your readers could go on vacation. Send your readers places they can't ever go. That's something that the off-planet Marvel continuity gets correct. I'll tell you another functional difference is the handling of time.
Dude, I have no idea how much time has occurred between movies. I have no clue. Just like in Batman versus Superman, I had no idea where they were at any given time. The geography of this universe is even muddier now. Because I can't tell like Metropolis and Gotham City are now like literally Minneapolis, St. Paul. I swear to God, they're on the Eastern Seaboard, which is somehow 30 miles from the middle of Kansas. And it's not that superheroes and the Flash can't travel that fast. It's that the movie does not convey it well. On top of that, now, I seriously have no idea what the actual timeline of this continuity is.
The only dead bang tell of it is at one point Lois says, 6 months ago I was dot to dot to dot, and now I'm D to D to D.
Oh, so it's only supposed to be 6 months?
Yeah, so it's less real time than actually passed between the movies. And it suffers for that. It feels real frozen. And the parts, particularly the Metropolis arcs, really feel like they're direct, linear. They picked right up where they left off. And then the world-spanning Batman stuff and Aquaman stuff feels like they were off doing their own stuff for much longer.
This is what I've been telling everybody on Facebook. If we took the Matt Foster Nighthawks Cafe full 100-point granularity scale, I've got like maybe a 51-52% recommend on this. Just because it does have good elements. It's got good parts. We barely mentioned Jason Momoa as Aquaman, who is a lot of fun in this movie. He is brings
the Lord of Wetness.
Yeah.
And that was the first time and call it progress if you will. That is the first time female gaze has actually been apparent to me in a movie, because I was in a theater and, like, collectively, when he smashes that whiskey bottle on the ground, you heard half the theater physically crumple. You heard grips tighten on the armrests and stuff of the movie. You heard everybody shift in their seats. Like,
bless my soul, holy God, that is a good looking man.
Actually, yeah, gotta give him the sploosh.
There were some probably college girls behind me that were just like that were literally fanning themselves and going like out loud. I'm like, that's I've never like, you go to Thor or something and you know Thor ain't ugly.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was the first movie I've ever been at where I heard the women kind of pig out like I've heard dudes do before. And I don't know if that's progress or not, but it was interesting.
And then we also have Ezra Miller as the Flash, who was great. And he kind of does, I hate to say it, because Spider-Man kind of beat them to the punch. But they took this speedster character, this character who is supposedly very quippy and very quick-witted and very snappy. And he usually has some good dialogue and one-liners, and made that a nervous tick. And I'm fully willing to say it's a parallel genesis of thought thing. I don't think that DC ripped this off of Marvel, but it kind of sucks timing-wise because Spider-Man Homecoming did the exact same thing. And even before that, Civil War, the Captain America Civil War kind of had that nervous tick thing too.
If you want to trawl this movie for positives, I actually really like the little moments of mentorship with the Flash.
Yeah, yeah, I do too. Absolutely.
The moment where he kind of freezes up, he goes, you know, I can move fast, but I don't have a lot of powers. What am I supposed to do in here? And he says, and Batman tells him, just, you're not going to talk. You're not going to fight. You're going to run in there, save one person, bring them back here. And he goes, well, then what do I do? And Batman goes, you'll know. That was a good scene.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
That was a standout piece of, that was a great comic book moment. That was a great Batman moment, you know?
Uh-huh.
Deserves some credit, and it's lots of little things like that. I think on my own scale where you need to beat a 50 to not feed the Sarlacc diner creature. I think I'm somewhere around a 68 on this movie, 67. I'm not quite at a 70.
Okay.
I'm over the 50 bracket. Like I'm definitely in a 6.5 somewhere.
Okay. You know, I might even be in the high 50s, but yeah, I don't know that I'm quite to a 60. But anyways, yeah, that, folks, take...
That's important before you send your hate mail, by the way. It's a scale for every movie ever made. We don't want to be Kotaku. We don't want to turn our scale into just A's and A minuses. We don't want our value system to turn into We Rate Dogs where everybody's a 10 plus, you know?
Okay, so...
Some movies are not good boys.
I will say, and we said this before, we're going to revisit this. It's better than any of the existing Transformers movies. It's better than a lot of the movies that are in this particular franchise. And it's a perfectly serviceable way to spend the afternoon when you've got nothing else to do. Drop off the kids, buy them a ticket, and have them watch it while you go Christmas shopping or vice versa. It's not a bad film. I'm not trying to talk anybody out of seeing it. But for me, I'm just at the point where with superhero movies, with comic book adaptations, I'm needing something else. And I'll goose and gander. There are a couple of times where I'm watching a Marvel movie going, ah, God, this just feels like the same movie again. You watch Ant-Man. I love Paul Rudd. I really do. But Ant-Man is just Iron Man where the suit does something different for a minute, you know. And so there's been a lot of repetition, and I'm afraid that Justice League is just kind of more of the same. Where it's tragic with Justice League is that they're trying to build a franchise out of this, and man, if they have too many more misfires, I just don't know how far this is going. There's a lot of planned films that are supposed to be coming out of this expanded universe, and I look at this list and I'm not seeing it happen. I really am not, if I'm being honest. Should we raise the spoiler curtain and then we can just talk with impunity?
Yeah, let's curtainize.
All right.
Bye.
So we are behind the spoiler curtain. We're going to be talking about this movie like you've seen it. So if you were looking to catch it before this conversation, you've officially missed your chance. We didn't even do a particularly good job of not talking about this and on the other side of the spoiler curtain. The big news is that Superman's back, if that surprises anybody. It comes as a surprise to absolutely no one, and I, for one,
feel completely dramatically betrayed that a comic book character who died has now come back to life.
Man, that's... Okay, so let's just talk about that for a second. That felt so unearned. The whole death and rebirth of Superman...
Well, I liked how they weren't trying to bring him back until they decided they really needed Superman to kick someone's ass. Like,
I can't believe he's gone. There's such a hole in the world. There's a Superman-sized hole in the world, and who is going to watch over us? Oh, hey, I've got an idea. Why don't we use that resurrection machine that we've always had? Now, granted, they needed the Allspark or the Tesseract or whatever the hell the MacGuffin, the cube-shaped MacGuffin was. Yeah, this time. Yeah, they needed that to make it work. I get it. I'm just saying, really?
Well, let's synopsize a little bit for what we've left behind the spoiler curtain is that the villain of Beavis Dodge 2, Justice Leaguer, none of these puns are working, Justice Beleaguered?
There's our episode name.
The villain of this is Steppenwolf, who is a DCU sort of intergalactic canon, like a Green Lantern, New Gods kind of villain.
Yeah.
Who is an associate of Darkseid, conqueror of many worlds, blah, 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 blah. Another problem continuities have is just an endless layer of big bads. Just like remember those guys that in the last book/movie/comic that we said were the baddest guys? These are the guys that they're afraid of. That's what I liked about Spider-Man Homecoming. It had a clear, like, hey, we're starting you off on level one.
Yeah.
There's more levels. We're gonna tell you that a four times. It's not gonna be that mysterious when you graduate, you know. So he wants three relics that are on Earth. They're cubes called the Mother Boxes. If he's able to combine them, then he gets sort of a terraforming force that he talks to Norman Bates style as though it were his mother. And it unleashes a force that will remake the Earth in the hellish image of his home planet, which he wants to do for some reason because he just doesn't like that there's stuff on Earth. He would rather have it look like the ass end of a volcano.
For all of the clunky and just really obtuse exposition we got in this movie, I think I remember him vaguely saying something about him being exiled, and he's kind of doing this to curry favor, one assumes from Darkseid, to kind of get back in their good graces and return to his once proud position.
It's sort of a thorn in the comic books. It's always sort of a thorn in the sides of these various cosmic entities that somehow the planet Earth continuously throws them back.
I do have to hand it to this movie. We only got, I think I counted one flashback this time instead of the multiple that we got in both Suicide Squad and Batman versus Superman.
It was a badass flashback that had real explanatory value.
Yeah, it did. Uh-huh.
It was kind of... particularly seeing that coalition all together and the Green Lantern cameo and that stuff was pretty great. You want to talk about, I liked the set piece where the Amazons were trying to outrun Steppenwolf.
Yeah, I did too.
Basically, the Amazons, to try to keep the first Mother Box out of his hand, they're trying to get, I think, back within the borders of Themyscira or whatever their inviolate fortress is.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to relay race the Mother Box, which is a cube about the size of a, you know, it's MacGuffin sized. It's just big enough for one person to transport. So they have this long horse and foot chase where Steppenwolf, who is about as he travels by leaping, kind of like the Hulk. He's fast and strong, but he doesn't outright fly.
Uh-huh.
And he's trying to catch them, and they're trying to stay ahead of him by any means, hook or crook, that they can. So they're throwing the box back and forth like a football. At one point, they, you know, they're relaying it with their golden lassos. It's a bunch of really neat action choreography, and it's many of the actors involved in it are the women that were the Amazons in the first one in Wonder Woman,
wearing significantly less clothing. Did you notice?
I didn't, because that's been sort of addressed as a criticism. I will say this, the ones in the battle scene, the ones that were guarding the outside of the fortress,
mm-hmm.
were wearing their breastplates and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that were running were wearing as little as possible. Which I do think, I don't know, like, if they were human, they would take that 40-pound thing off if they were just going to run in a dead sprint. But, I mean, I don't know what difference 40 pounds makes to them,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Right.
One piece of bronze probably doesn't slow them down that much, but there was a rebuttal piece from one of the actresses that was like, hey, listen, buddy, if you can't handle looking at my midriff, that's on you, you know? She's like, I knew what I was doing when I signed up, but... So I guess there's multiple takes on that, but... So
I also wanted to address, because we had just that amazing display of really great action storytelling about the exchange and keep it, playing this game of keep away with this MacGuffin. And then there's the scene where they use the Mother Box to resurrect Superman. For whatever reason that's never explained, Superman comes back and is a bad guy for about 5 minutes.
He's homicidally disoriented for the first little bit when he wakes up, has a tangle with the rest of the Justice League at his monument in Metropolis, which was visually brilliant. Another great standalone scene.
Yeah, again, great standalone scene. But what the hell did they do is they literally leave the Mother Box on top of a car. And in the background, you see a boom tube come down. Then, like, 2 seconds of nothing, and then the boom tube goes out as, like...
Yeah, yeah.
Theoretically, Steppenwolf just kind of walked over and said, huh, I thought this would be harder. Grabbed the damn Mother Box and then left.
Well, that was a freebie.
They get so caught up with dealing with Superman that they can't even detail one Alfred or Bat-Drone or anything to even just kind of... Or hypothetically, the Flash could just go over there and grab it at any point. And
yeah.
And they were pretty busy dealing with Superman, who is the most powerful thing in the universe.
Agreed.
But it does seem a little funny that at some point the basically Steppenwolf hamburgles the last. Robble, robble, robble. You know. Given that Joe Morton's character... You know, there were Lois Lane. There were several mundanes.
Yeah.
Standing around. There were a lot of muggles right there that could have just gone, hey, Flash, he's grabbing the thing. If you want to talk plot holes, like if we've decided we've praised enough,
because we've praised it so much, yeah.
The first act of this movie. Does rely on the fact that Batman, Aquaman, and Wonder Woman need to know something. Three out of three of them need to know something for the plot to move forward.
Uh-huh.
And Aquaman and Wonder Woman already know it, and it just takes them 20 minutes to tell Batman. I mean, it's not quite a plot hole, but it is sort of beleaguered.
Yeah, it's kind of. Again, I'm not sure why Superman was homicidal when he came back from the dead. And then his turnaround almost feels unearned as they pull an Incredible Hulk with him and kind of trot out his girlfriend to help him remember. And then when he does that, it's almost instantaneous. And then he's fine, but he's just going to go chill in Kansas for a couple of hours. While the rest of the team is literally fighting for the fate of the planet.
Yeah, how long does it take for you to get your pants on when you've been dead? All right.
Well, and then the meantime, we also had... No, the reason they did that is just to have an excuse for Superman to show up in a dramatic fashion at the end because he had not been with them before. Okay, fine, whatever. You got your payoff. It sucked. But you also had that payoff when Jason Momoa, as Aquaman, the flawless human specimen that he is.
And whatever my equivalent of sploosh is, which I guess is just sploosh.
He's originally pretty reluctant to join up and says, nah, I'm going to do my own thing and go be Hawaiian, Alaskan hippie and bring fish for these villagers. And then, of course, they just happen to be in a tunnel under Gotham Harbor when they first square off with Steppenwolf. And Steppenwolf just happens to open a giant hole in the side of the wall. And who should come rushing in with the tide but Jason Momoa as he comes in to save the day? That felt unearned. And here's where it is. And this, I hesitate to bring it up because it is something I have been saying since they announced this film was going to happen, is that DC has been pedal to the metal to get Justice League out. And in doing so, kind of forsaked. They chose to ignore the kind of Marvel model where they set up a lot of individual characters first in their own standalone mini franchises before bringing them together in an Avengers style crossover. The problem with this movie is that we give no shit about these characters. The dialogue that I was griping about this earlier, the dialogue that they give Joe Morton and Ray Fisher, who plays Cyborg, to have to deliver. And this was another issue I had with timing. Ray Fisher is talking to Joe Morton like this accident just happened to him and that he's just kind of getting the hang of this for the first time. Does anybody out there know that I'm still alive? Questions that you probably would have asked immediately following and becoming cognizant, which we know happened even before the last movie. So the dialogue there is just, God, it was almost amateurish. It was frightening. It's like, this is a crime for two really fantastic actors. I love Joe Morton. And it just, yeah, I couldn't believe it. And it's just a lot of little things like that that just really drag the movie down. And we're at the point where we have all of this talent and all of this money and all of these resources. Warner Brothers has no excuse to give me a movie that's just simply better than Batman versus Superman. They have all of the tools in play to make a fantastic movie, but something just keeps getting in the way and it's getting aggravating.
I don't know. I mean, there's a few things that make these chug, and I agree. One of them is particularly because it's Batman, and particularly because you're sort of trying to reboot the Joker and not Batman all the way. Not having a standalone Bat movie was a huge Bat mistake.
Yeah, I think all of these people, I think, and what have we learned? The best movie out of all of them is a standalone movie. And it's one for the character that historically in the Justice League, I have liked the least. I was not a Wonder Woman fan until the Gal Gadot cameo in Batman versus Superman. I'm like, holy crap, is this what I've been missing? Why not a Jason Momoa Aquaman movie to give us all that clunky backstory and we can showcase him, we can build a rabid fan base who is looking to see that dude either throw down or make out with Henry Cavill. It would have built so much better, but it almost seemed like Warner Brothers was just obstinately trying to do it backwards because it's the way that Marvel was not doing it. But really what I think it was is they were just trying to rush for that cash grab, and I think it's really, really hurt them.
Here's another thing that we'd be remiss in discussing, talking about DC. The really good storylines it has in its animated universe.
I've been saying since Christopher Nolan stepped down that what Warner Brothers needs to do is come in and have Bruce Timm, just you drive a dump truck of money up to that dude's house and have him be your Kevin Feige kind of overseer. Because Bruce Timm, whether you like the guy or not, whether you like what he's done recently or not, has successfully built the DC universe for modern media successfully several times.
Well, what's Bruce Timm done lately that people don't like? Is he?
Yeah, he had his fingers on some of the lesser animated films. There was a lot of criticism for some changes that were made in The Killing Joke and that type of thing. And I'm not going to begrudge anybody that. It bothered me too. But at the same time, the dude gave me the best Batman I've ever had in my life, which is Kevin Conroy in the animated series Batman.
Oh, but he doesn't like go home at night and strangle puppies or anything.
Not that I'm aware of now, but in the modern political sphere, nothing past anybody.
You gave me the flutters for a second there. I'm getting where I don't even want to hear a celebrity's name anymore.
Yeah.
There's just a sort of, I don't know. It's like, you ever been on one of those pages where they show people trying to cook Gordon Ramsay stuff? And it's like they put all the right stuff in a bowl and they cooked it through and you can probably eat what they made, but it doesn't look like Gordon Ramsay's, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Hashtag nailed it.
I don't know. Again, this is another one of those situations where I kind of feel bad because really this movie does not deserve to be hated. I don't hate this movie, but man, I sure am disappointed.
There's so much here that is functional, like the beeline with the family in Chernobyl or wherever it was.
That didn't work as well for me.
The climactic scene when they all need to do something and it takes all of them to do it together as a team. Steppenwolf himself seemed really unhinged, and it's actually it's Kieran Hines, I believe I incorrectly identified his craggy Irish voice as belonging to Liam Neeson.
Yes, but it is interesting that Kieran Hines actually did get mocap advice from Liam Neeson, who had just recently done so on.
Don't say the name.
Okay.
Okay, say it.
A Monster Calls. It's okay, buddy.
So sad.
It's okay. You all right?
I'm good.
Okay.
I'm good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, honestly, his voice performance was fine. It's just I didn't think he was a particularly well-realized effect. And I kind of had that problem with Doomsday, too, where it was just like, this just looks really kind of generic. And like, I've seen this design before and it's not quite moving right. And there was actually, this may have been a product of the 3D, but I mean, there was even a couple of like when they have the giant black Superman banners hanging over London and stuff that didn't quite seem to integrate and kind of looked cheap and phony, like just really bad digital effects. And that's the first time I've kind of had that in a long time for a movie. And so, yeah, honestly, just overall, this was not my cup of tea. I hate to say it because it really should be. I love a lot of these characters. This actually, I will say that I'm kind of watching this going, you know, I haven't read The Flash in a while. I should probably read some of The Flash. And then I'm like, I should probably read some of the more badass, more pirate inclined Aquaman.
For a while there, they made Aquaman pretty scrappy.
Yeah.
And that's something worth mentioning, is it is a law of sort of comics that creatorship comes and goes, and that you won't like everybody's run on a comic.
Right. Yeah, that's absolutely true.
And the inverse law is that eventually someone will come along and do something good with everybody. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, Kevin Smith wrote a really gripping Mysterio story at one point.
Yeah, and it wasn't even a Spider-Man book. He had borrowed Mysterio for Daredevil. And that is probably one of my more favorite collected kind of comic book trades, is that Guardian Devil run that Kevin Smith did. And it was Mysterio.
Mysterio, the guy with a glass dome for his head.
Or what was the run of DC where, like, Blue Beetle actually was awesome for, like, I don't know, 16 issues or something?
Mr. Miracle, Scott Free, the super-powered escape artist, which is just so, like, you know, he's a guy that's had good arcs.
Elongated Man had another... Elongated Man, the less cool version of Plastic Man. Had a really good arc once.
Less cool version of Plastic Man, who is himself. I was starting to say he was the less cool version of Mr. Fantastic, but let's be honest, Plastic Man's actually pretty cool.
Yeah, Plastic Man's awesome.
Plastic Man's owning it, you know?
But yeah, it was Identity Crisis where Elongated Man, and I think actually that was the really cool Blue Beetle arc too, or it was right around the same time. Cool things can be done with these characters, and maybe that's it, Matt. Maybe it's just I'm having creator conflict. Maybe this is not a run of DC storylines that is just, it's not for me. Give me more Wonder Woman. Give me more Aquaman. And if we can't have more Aquaman, just give me more Jason Momoa in anything. And I'll take care of that. Honestly, the two characters that, I wasn't especially taken with Cyborg. That's no fault of the performance. They didn't give him anything to do. He was really just a generic R2-D2 here, interface with the machine and make it work for us. He was a well-placed plot driver. And unfortunately, his kind of human, what is humanity? What is machine? What does it all mean? That whole arc is kind of abandoned and kind of left in the lurch. Now, maybe they're going to explore it more in a solo Cyborg movie. But again, I just don't see it happening. I really don't.
I will bring up another good point.
Okay. Yeah, let's end on a positive note.
Let us thank the lords of the DC universe that they somehow avoided the pitfall of reiterating the origins of characters that are almost 100 years old. I mean, Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman are literally...
They're getting there.
80?
Wonder Woman was 1941, so she came on a little later.
Yeah, and Aquaman is 41 as well. Okay, 100 is an exaggeration, but certainly we know enough about these guys. And you know, what I was really actually hoping is that given that the physical resemblance between Momoa and the Atlanteans in Young Justice, I was kind of hoping that we were going to see Black Manta, who the Young Justice Black Manta is actually really interesting.
Uh-huh.
For one thing, he's it's literal. Like, they went there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, the rebel Atlanteans in Young Justice are racially misserved people. And so there's this weird, like, wait, is Black Manta actually, is he bad? I don't, what's going on here, you know?
I will say, and I think Young Justice actually got picked up for another season at Netflix, or at least that was the last thing I heard. Check your local Google to see if that's still happening, because that has been a while ago and I haven't heard anything about it since. But I mean, really, there are good places to get these good DC stories. And for whatever reason, because they're not theatrical and because they're not live action, people tend to give them up just like, oh, it's a cool one off and it doesn't really count. No, you. These movies count. Batman Mask of the Phantasm is my favorite Batman film of all time. It was theatrical. It did count. I don't know what else to tell you. Yeah, I'm sorry. Just the newest crop of crossover movies is just not doing it for me. But I will say, because I did want to end on a positive note, there was a couple of very, very welcome music cues in this that really just kind of warmed the hell out of my heart and made me feel a lot better, at least in that moment during the movie. And it's when they brought back the Danny Elfman Batman theme and had a quick couple bars of the John Williams Superman theme and kind of resurrecting those theme songs because they are so iconic. And hearing those again with these new incarnations of these characters, individually, I like the actors behind them. I like the portrayals they're giving. I like the way they've set these characters up. I just don't like what they're doing with them. But, you know, the music cues were very, very welcome. It was really cool. That got a little bit of a rise out of me. And so I didn't want to happen to call that out.
Like, and then the other thing going on, since we're well behind the spoiler curtain now, the end thing, right?
Oh, are you talking about
There's two stingers on Justice League. One of them is a cute scene where we reenact the scene that's been depicted several times in DC Comics and animation, which is the race between Flash and Superman.
Yeah, the right? Foot race between Flash and the Superman.
Which, that's cool. And then the second one is we're shown a brief hint that Lex Luthor has broken out of jail because there's a double standing in for him in prison. And then we cut to his fancy yacht somewhere in Monaco or Gotham Harbor or wherever it is. A Zodiac pulls up to his yacht and out gets a guy in armor. And we're thinking, like, and Trevor and I both had the same thought initially. And it's a product of crummy visual design during that 90s big peck period.
Yeah.
In comic books. But we both thought it at first, we were like, oh, did they get... Is this a Will Smith cameo? Is it Deadshot? Is it, you know?
Yeah, did they bring Deadshot back from Suicide Squad?
But it's Deathstroke, who is his costume is very nearly Deadpool. Deathstroke and Deadshot have some costuming overlap that gets confusing at times.
Uh-huh.
So what we get here is Deathstroke. The problem is the Deathstroke we get, and this is something that's driving me nuts about the DCU right now, is the DCU globally has some pretty cool TV stuff. But the TV stuff is tonally different. The TV stuff is very four color. You have Arrow, Supergirl, and The Flash, which are all pretty decent in their own right if you take them for what they are.
Don't forget Gotham either.
Oh yeah, Gotham, yeah. And of course, they try to explain their continuity differences away with multiversality, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The Supergirl does not actually happen on the same planet as The Flash. They are different Earths. But because of the Speed Force, they can do occasional crossovers because the Speed Force just makes no sense. So Arrow and Flash actually happen on a different planet with a different complement of Kryptonians, and Clark Kent and Kara Zor-El are different ages in the Supergirl. The Supergirl Clark Kent is not Henry Cavill. It is a different guy who is all, he's Kal-El, son of Jor-El, and he's Superman, but he's not the same guy. He doesn't have all the same experiences as quote unquote our Superman.
Right.
Right. So they've explained it canonically, but the problem is in Arrow, they have Manu Bennett is a really good Deathstroke. they have Deathstroke on there all the time. He's a series regular and he's anti-heroic, and he's not quite how they set him up in Justice League. So I hope that doesn't cause confusion, you know?
I don't know. It just seems like Warner Brothers doesn't know what the hell they're doing, to be perfectly honest. And I don't know. It's getting so unwieldy at the point where it's like, I'm hoping for a Crisis on Infinite Earths so we can try again in like maybe 5 or 10 years. But at the same time, I really hate to do that because I do like parts of it. I like Wonder Woman. I like Aquaman. I like The Flash. Some of the action beats and set pieces, it's just they can't seem to tell a good story. And they've done it like once. And it might be worth mentioning that the one story that was told was interesting because it was told by a female filmmaker about a female hero, which is a perspective in a story that we don't get very often. And it's when they went off formula that they were successful.
I don't know. I think first off, the problem with comparing it to Wonder Woman is Wonder Woman had some stuff going for it. For one thing, it had a large, clear thesis, which was like, punch fascists, do good. You know, and it had the brilliant through line of like her issues of faith, her transition where like she believes that if she kills Ares, it will allow humans to be better. She can put an end to the personification of war and war will stop, you know, and that existential crisis that she has in the movie when the events transpire and she realizes that it's the other way around, that the gods are eidolons of things projected by humanity. And so there's some big ideas in the silly movie that is Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And it's centered around someone who plays the part perfectly physically, is a good actress. And, you know, there's always that. It's really a pretty terrific constellation of things happen in Wonder Woman. And it's hard to replicate that alchemy. It's really hard to do in an ensemble movie. Ensemble movies are too busy. They should be like special episodes.
Another good example of that is Captain America Civil War. The actual crossover portion of that was not the main driving thrust of that movie. It was a moment. It was probably a full act worth of action scene. But it was a cool moment. You got to see your characters. They got to go out and do their thing. They teased a couple of things. They set a couple of things up. They had a couple of things pay off. And then they went on to continue to tell a different story that didn't involve all 12 characters that were in that fight. And I think that's why Civil War functioned so much better as a sequel to The Avengers than The Avengers 2 did. And it's because we have this propensity that when we have these ensemble films that We have to explain everything. We have to give everybody their 5 minutes. Everybody has to have something that they're good at. Everybody has to have that one. We have to have one scene where Aquaman saves the day. We have to have the one scene where Batman saves the day. We have to have the one scene where Wonder Woman saves the day. And then she does it again because she's good for the box office. And it just, it all seems very, when Warner Brothers is doing it, it all seems very insincere. And it's really starting to come through. And that's a shame because I think a lot of these artists and a lot of these performers are very sincere and are trying to do something really good. And they're being hampered by a studio that really wants to do this by the book and try and make money on it, which is ultimately what this business is about. You can't really motherfuck them for that. But I'm sorry, Warner Brothers, you swung and you missed. It just
I'll tell you another key difference that's very interesting to me in how Thor and Justice League handled continuity. In Thor Ragnarok, there's a throwaway joke that the cast has to be reminded about. Was it Zirkovia? Like Thor almost spaces out what happened there.
Yeah,
and like it's a throwaway. It was okay. We had a misstep. We're moving on. Whereas Justice League is tightly. Like they're like, well, there was, you know, not everybody loved Batman versus Superman, but we got to really. You know, there's no way it's even possible, even though we deliberately had someone do another crack at this movie to change the tone of it. There's no way we can unbraid it from that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, there is, you know, there was no need for it to be so rooted in what didn't work in Dawn of Justice. So what is this like? So that makes this Noon of Justice. is this 10:45? Is this Brunch of Justice?
No, this is Justice. we went from dawn to justice, and then we will have the sunset of justice, which is honestly, judging by the box office, where this franchise is headed.
I wish everybody the best. I hope
no, this is not me ragging on DC. They're functionally not working. These movies are not coming together. Something is broken. They need to fix something, and I think we can look at Wonder Woman and see that this can be done, and that there is someone somewhere. My lead culprit is Zack Snyder, to be perfectly honest, which breaks my heart. I used to really be a booster for that guy, but the God's honest truth is I haven't liked the last several of his films, and I have to give him also the credit that he had a hard time on this movie. He had some hard times in his personal life. He had to leave production of this film because of the death of his daughter. That is hard, and that will do something to a movie. And when you have Joss Whedon come in and take over directing duties in the final days of this film, fire your music guy and bring in Danny Elfman. I mean, there's a lot going on. There's a lot of different places this could have gone off the rails, but it did go off the rails. And if we're going to get more out of this franchise, something needs to happen. We need a clear, concise vision.
I actually didn't know that about Zack Snyder. That sucks.
Yeah.
I think they can get there if they keep, you know, they keep making progress. And ultimately, it's like we were saying, on the scale of every movie ever made, no, I didn't want my money back. How are you feeling, sir? Have Dr. Matt Hatton and the Trevor from Beyond Space successfully teamed up and defeated the dead horse?
Yeah, and my apologies to anybody who, like, really liked this film. We don't think any less of you for doing so. It's okay to like stuff. This one just didn't work for us.
The Trevor out of space, I guess you should be.
All right, Matteo. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up for us. Thank you for joining us here on the Nighthawks podcast. As always, be sure to look for us on Stitcher, on iTunes, or your podcast aggregate of choice. Whatever aggregate of choice that is, subscribe to us. Leave us some feedback. Leave us a rating. Help boost those numbers. Help boost our visibility. And as always, tell your friends about us. Matt, anything I'm forgetting?
We never leave the cafe. We're part of the cafe.
Won't you come in and sit down? There's room for one more.
Oh, hey, you know what? You know what we did forget?
What's that?
We didn't mention that the Concrete Blonde version of Everybody Knows is also really good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny you should mention that. It's been covered several times and prominently by Concrete Blonde, which was also featured in Pump Up the Volume. And so on that note, I think now's as good as any time to say that we're going to sign off because it's almost morning.
In the cafe where we never leave. Hey, if anybody out there is a good hand with fan art and they want to draw the cafe organism, please do.
Everybody knows you've been discreet. So many people you had to meet without your clothes. And everybody knows.